Welcome to the Bike Talk with Dave podcast. I'm your host, Dave Mabel. Thanks tons for tuning in. I got to thank Facebook for introducing me to this week's guest, Clint Mongan. As I got an invite to a bike demo event, it sounded kind of fun, so I dug into who was hosting it. I anticipated it being one of our local bike shops, all of whom I know so well. But this name kept popping up, Boone Cycles. Boone Cycles. A new shop in Boone? There's a small town about 45 minutes northwest of where I live called Boone, so someone must have opened a shop in Boone, huh? So I dug a little deeper and I found a website with a bunch of top-tier junior downhillers all over it. That's weird. We live in Iowa, where the biggest downhill is Rock Candy Mountain that I had to walk up in the Limestone 77.7 last week. So I dig a little more and I find the address. St. Charles, Iowa. What? Why is there a shop in St. Charles? It's like 30 minutes from anywhere. But sure enough, turns out there's a cute little bike shop selling the best downhill, enduro, and XC mountain bikes sitting right across the street from the Hinterland Music Festival, one of the biggest outdoor music festival grounds in the country. I can't imagine how this thing works out, so I gotta get this dude's story. And that led me to Clint, founder and owner of not only Boone Cycles, but the Boone Factory Downhill Racing Team, which boasts one of the fastest downhillers in the country, if not the world. I'll let him tell you all that. So let's dive in and find out just how a tiny little shop in the middle of nowhere is also one of the best shops anywhere. Clint Mongan. Clint Mongan, I'm excited to have you on Bike Talk with Dave. To be honest, I haven't had a bike shop owner on in the almost 3 years I've had this podcast. Correction. As I just had Jenna Reinhardt on, who owns Nicolet Bike and Ski in Mankato, Minnesota, with her husband Justin. To be fair, I had her on to talk about bike racing, but she and her husband do own a bike shop. Check it out next time you're in Mankato. Okay, now back to our show. I don't know, man, like, this is just weird.
It is. It's weird. It's the weirdest bike shop in America. I hear that all the time, in a good way.
Yep.
But, yeah, you walk in to 400 square feet, you wouldn't expect to see, you know, $300,000 worth of inventory hanging from the ceiling in the form of carbon dual suspension bikes in the middle of Iowa.
I mean, you are literally in the middle of Iowa, because we're in the middle of Iowa, but probably a little south. We're probably 75 miles south of Ames, maybe.
Yeah.
So Ames I'd call middle of Iowa. So you're south of the middle of Iowa specifically.
Yep.
That being said, you're in the middle of nowhere, kind of. For context, 400 square feet. My master bedroom might be bigger than this shop.
Probably.
So go in your master bedroom and look around, and that's the size of this bike shop. And it's a cute little cottage next to the, how do you say it, Ames?
Yes.
Covered bridge in St. Charles, Iowa. And one more thing. I did measure my bedroom, and it's 280 square feet, not 400 square feet. But my garage, there's your context. Like, you're not even in St. Charles. You're next to the Ames Bridge, which is on your way out of town.
Town of 500 people.
Town of 500 people. I almost didn't even look up your address. I'm glad I did, because I had to actually find it. But I just drove into St. Charles, was looking around, and I'm like, the numbers are not corresponding with what I think. So I plugged it into my computer and it took me back out of town on the way out of town. And like you said, $350,000 worth of inventory, which probably shouldn't tell people where you're at.
Yeah.
Hanging on the ceiling and the walls of full suspension downhill mountain bike rigs, all these shocks, suspension systems, everything, and we're in the middle of freaking Iowa. I feel like when I was driving down here, I'm like, I may be going to Oklahoma to go to a ski shop, and it would be the same thing.
Exactly.
And I just got to hear your story. So anyway, now that I've painted the picture of your bike shop, what the hell are you doing here?
Well, yeah, it's a very intentional business model. The funny thing about the bike industry is everybody that's actually in the industry will tell you, you can't make money here. It's very hard to make money in the bike industry.
For sure.
So I started looking at having been a self-employed person my whole life, running different businesses and saying, okay, what do I have to do to make money? Low overhead goes a long way. That's why I'm in a town of 500 people on the edge of a cornfield in a little shop. The next thing that would make it work is improving your margin with your vendors. That means you have to do very high volume.
Mm-hmm. So, well, the two don't correspond. That's what's so weird. Like, right. A tiny little shop in the middle of nowhere is not going to do high volume unless...
Unless you start sponsoring youth racers.
Okay, that sounds like a cash flow out.
Yes, you have to play the long game in the bike industry. I decided when I started the shop that I was not going to write myself a paycheck for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And so I came from building log homes for 25 years, and I knew well that I'd have to kind of have some income trickling in from that as I started the shop. So it was a part-time shop for the first 2.5-3 years. And then COVID hit.
And welcome you could do to the no bike wrong. Industry.
Yeah, I mean, anything you could get your hands on, you could sell. So there was no need to continue with a second job, you know. So I went full-time right as COVID hit into the bike industry. Obviously, without the second stream of income, I had to start pulling a little bit of income to cover my expenses, but the expenses here are so low, and just as a stroke of luck, a music festival started coming to our town called Hinterland.
That's a biggie.
It's a biggie. It's 50,000 people in a town of 500 for 3 to 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And this shop sits on 2 acres, and it's right across from the venue, the outdoor amphitheater. And so I would park cars for 3 days and make, you know, $8,000 in 3 days, minus the 7% you pay back to the state for sales tax. So you clear, you know, over $7,000. And in a shop this small, I mean, that would cover my overhead for the whole year, the general liability insurance, utilities, free enterprise insurance, you know, the shop van insurance. So that helped a lot, you know, just... the timing of COVID and the appearance of Hinterland Music Festival. About the time I decided, at least told my banker that, you know, I would hit the profit button and start going, is when the bike market crashed.
Oh.
So,
boy, you've had just fortunate timing all the way around, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, when you're low overhead and you do high volume, I mean, you can thrive in a soft market, because that's a market that's very difficult for bigger shops with inner city rent, employee payroll, matching payroll taxes. I don't have any of that.
Mm-hmm.
My goal from the beginning is to make high-end bikes more accessible, especially to younger generations of racers. Because most parents aren't going to go drop $10,000 on their 12-year-old's race bike.
Or their own,
you know, in Iowa. I mean, maybe in Colorado, California.
Yeah.
It's a way of life there, not so much here. So I started going to national level races. You know, we've got regional races in the Midwest. I still hit some of those. But if you go to national level races, every kid there is just blazing fast, every single one. You'll see some kids stand out for particular reasons. Either they're fast and they look like they're working half as hard because they're so talented and smooth. They're never they never have a death grip on the handlebars. They just go, and that stands out. Another thing that will stand out is a kid's personal character. So when those two things align, you know, you've got a kid that's smooth and fast, high personal character. That's who you want to sponsor as a small shop. I mean, that's a low risk right there.
Yeah.
So I met two kids right away, one from Columbia, Missouri, and one that was just a full-time travel race family. And it wasn't long before the full-time racer was pretty well regarded as the fastest 14-year-old in the world, and or at least in the country for sure. And that's the races we're going to, is U.S. national races. So things just took off quick. I had component companies coming to me saying, hey, tell me about your racer. You know, we'd like to sponsor her. And we'd go to component companies as well. And the ones that I do high volume with, because you have some leverage when you're doing high volume. You say, hey, I got this kid. This is going to be really, really good, and already is really, really good. And yeah, it's just this past year, I mean, I've traveled to Sunrise, Arizona for a race, Killington, Vermont, Angel Fire, New Mexico, Wind Rock, Tennessee. It's been a lot of fun for me. And her career is really starting to take off as a professional, and she's only 15. But I mean, at Wind Rock, Tennessee, it's like well known as the steepest terrain in the United States. She entered a race in the pro class, racing against Yeti's Team Factory rider, Specialized Team Factory rider, Cannondale. She won the last three stages of that race as a 14-year-old.
Oh, wow.
So then I had really had component companies coming to me saying, hey,
right,
you beat our rider, you know, so tell me more about her. And as of 2 months ago, Mondraker, a brand that's trying to establish themselves in the U.S. right now. They're a Spanish brand. I call them the Spanish Yeti because they are a race bike, and Yeti's a race brand. They offered us a deal, and we took that. And so she's going to be a Mondraker athlete next year, with support from me, as far as components go. And I kind of act as an agent, you know, because I go to my component brands that I do high volume with and negotiate getting free stuff. And sometimes you get what they call P2P funds, that's pay to podium. So like if she finishes first, you know, one component company might give her $800, you know, second place might be $600, third place $400. She's also a Monster Energy athlete, so they give her pay to podium. And then the race itself usually will have a payout, you know, of anywhere from $3,000 for first place to maybe, in the case of Killington, Vermont, it was $15,000 for first place.
Oh, my.
So for pro class, which was what she'll be racing next year. So I didn't see that coming when I started the shop, obviously. I mean, you can't predict finding a rider of that caliber and just having everything kind of fall into your lap like that, but it did. And it's kind of reshaped my business model. Next year we'll do a lot of race replicas of her bike, you know.
Sure.
But to get back to your question of how does a small shop do high volume, when I go to these races and you've got this 14-year-old beating pros, you'll get approached by parents of other kids and say, hey, you know, could you build me a bike like hers? And you just take what comes your way and roll with it, and let it shape your business model, and not come at it with, this is what I want my business model to be, I'm going to stick with it. You kind of have to be flexible in the bike industry, because again, everybody in the industry will tell you, you can't make money here. And yet we have so many bike enthusiasts coming to the industry trying to start shops.
I just got to say, like, you're right, and everything you're saying is like a foreign language. I worked retail in a bike shop through college, and even in the 06, 07, 08 time. And the fact that you're even saying, like, where you're going to these races and you own a little retail bike shop, like, that doesn't make sense. Like, how do you leave here? How do you run the shop here? You know, all this stuff goes through my head. You've got somebody working in the back room. You've got somebody working in the front room. I just had Jenna Reinhardt on. She and her husband owned a shop in downtown Mankato, Minnesota. And, you know, we talked about the different roles of people. And it's like your stereotypical retail bike shop. You got a front room, you got a back room, you've got, you know, sales, and then you've got accessories, and you take t-shirts on the road on, you're in Iowa, so you're going to take t-shirts on the road on Ragbri, and I'm not hearing any of that.
No.
I'm hearing you, like, connecting with a small handful of really good athletes, and somehow moving a whole bunch of inventory over the course of a year out of 400 square feet. I'm going to say literally in the middle of a cornfield, but you're not literally in the middle of a cornfield, but there is corn nearby for sure.
Right on the edge.
Right on the edge.
Yeah.
Right on the edge. You're literally across the street from the Hinterland Music Festival venue.
Right.
Which was, in the bike industry, sometimes you park cars.
Right.
To make it work.
Right.
But, so how, like, I get that you go to these places and two parents a weekend ask, like, oh, hey, can you set up my bike like your all-star pro there? But that's not high volume. That's a couple bikes.
Right.
Tell me about the high volume. And yeah. Then on your website, you talk about sales tax, and I want to hear the story on that as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking I'm going to go to Oklahoma and open a ski shop.
There you go.
Based on your model.
So if you've got a parent that wants a replica of the bikes I build for Cali, and that's my racer's name, chances are they ride bikes too. They're a biking family, or they wouldn't be traveling. I mean, the Monster Downhill Energy Race Series is, it goes from California. First race of the year is North Carolina, and then West Virginia, and then California, and then Vermont. That's an investment for parents to be hopping around the country like that.
100%.
Next year, they're going to expand to six, I think six races at, you know, somewhere in the middle of the country in Colorado, and then another, maybe Pacific Northwest.
Rock Candy Mountain just south of here. I just rode it on Saturday, did the Limestone 77, and we came up one of those B roads, 25% grade for... felt like forever.
Yeah.
And it's 5 miles from here. So you could do your own downhill event there.
Downhill, yeah.
It would actually work.
Yeah, full on downhill is pretty extreme. You've got to be in the Rockies or in the Ozark. Yeah, I mean, it's to pull that off in Iowa would be something else. You'd have to move a lot of dirt to make that.
Fair enough.
Make that good.
Anyway, I interrupted you. Go on.
But yeah, so the parents, you know, start networking for me, basically, and it's just a word of mouth business model.
Huh.
I mean, it is.
And you do enough volume COVID, online.
Yeah. During COVID, you know, I leveraged that. You know, during COVID, you could sell stuff for full retail plus, and come up with all these new ghost fees you don't see in bike shops, like a setup fee or origination, like you could get at a car dealer, you know. Because there was a shortage of bikes and everybody wanted one. I didn't do that. I continued to discount during COVID to build my customer base. And that allowed me to pick and choose who I wanted in my customer base. So if I had a customer come to me and say, hey, I'm going to race Leadville this year and I'm going to try an Enduro for the first time. And they got three different types of bikes that they want. That's a customer you want, you know.
For sure.
In my business model. I mean, ideally, you want to serve everybody that wants a bike, but during COVID, you couldn't. So I'm thinking ahead. I'm like, this is a person that buys a new bike every year, at least one, to replace one in their quiver, you know. So I spent all of COVID doing that, just shaping my business model, my customer base, is a better way to put it, the way that I wanted it, the way that I would see it paying off in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got about 150 customers that buy one or two, sometimes three bikes a year. And I work with the same 150 over and over and over. And once in a while, word of mouth, someone they ride with, you know, will come and kind of join my customer base. So it's unique in that nature too. I'm not, you know, I don't do e-commerce. You can't go on my website and buy anything. You know, you can go and see what I sell, you know, and the types of bikes that I sell, but you can't click and collect anything.
Huh.
I have a personal relationship with all my customers.
They've got to call you, email you, begin a relationship.
They got to tell me what they're going to ride terrain-wise. We go over their height and their weight and their, if they're honest with you, their skill level. and they like that. They like that, you know, that I sponsor a very accomplished rider. They like that I do product testing for a couple companies in the industry. Most of that's on non-disclosure agreements. Otherwise, I'd love to tell you about it. But to have someone who's a product tester and a race team manager of a successful athlete, take all the information you can give him and build a bike specifically for what you're going to do that year. It's just worked really well to retain customers, and that's what I wanted to do, is just build the customer base that I work with over and over and over, retain those customers. And here I am. I sell about 100 Yetis a year, about maybe 90 Pivot brand, 50 or 60 Rebel bikes. Just getting started with Mondraker because they're sponsoring Cali. So yeah, it's something that's taken its own shape as things have come along. But I did kind of have a vision in the beginning to have that customer base that would just come back. And then at some point, you don't have to ask so many questions. What's your height? What your weight? Once you've dealt with the same customer 3, 4, 5, 6 times, you kind of know their riding style, their age, you know, and it just gets more efficient as a business model. You asked about taxes. So currently, most states have a sales tax nexus threshold law. So you can ship as a small business, and this is meant to be small business friendly, and it is, but you can ship in most states up to $100,000 in product to their state through interstate commerce, meaning that they have to have 2 feet on the ground in their state. I've got to have 2 feet on the ground in my state. You send them an online invoice, they pay it, you can ship it. Until you sell more than 100 grand per year to that state, you don't have to collect sales tax on behalf of that state. Once you cross that threshold, you've established a tax nexus.
Mm-hmm.
A couple states, it's actually 500,000, California and Texas, which obviously are big income states.
Sure.
So,
that's a 5, 6, 7, even 8 potentially percent discount right there.
Right. Oh, California, Texas, yeah, it's closer to 9.5.
Yeah, wow.
Sales tax rate there. So,
and you're talking a $10,000 bike, that's $1,000
yep,
in your pocket.
Exactly.
$800 to $1,000 in your pocket. So
yeah,
there's your discount without even giving a discount.
Yeah, and I still discount because I don't have employee payroll. I don't have the overhead of inner city rent. The shop is paid for.
It's crazy. Now I'm curious. It sounds like any bike you ship out of here is going to be custom. Like nobody's walking through that front door and buying something rack off the shelf, because all I'm seeing are frames hanging here.
You don't. I have 2 demo bikes right there that are put together, and that's exactly what they are, as demo bikes. People can come test ride these 2 new Mondrakers. Virtually everything else is just hanging from the ceiling as a frame. People can build it any way they dream. So most of my customer base are obviously experienced riders. If they're buying a bike every year, 2 bikes every year, so they have an idea of what they want for a drivetrain and suspension. The bike manufacturer might not provide that. Like with Yeti, they don't provide Shimano anymore. It's not an option. So,
but you can, because you've got the frame.
At the shop level, I just start with a frame and put whatever they want on it.
And you have a bunch of inventory. Is that so you can build quick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or do people buy stuff?
It depends on the brand. And, you know, some brands, like Pivot, if I call and order a bike, they have it shipped out the same day if I call before 2 o'clock, and it's a 3-day transit from Phoenix to here. So no big deal. Most of my other brands, there's a 5 to 7 day lead time before they can get it shipped out the door. So you try to have more of those brands in stock, frames. And now if you order just a frame, obviously there's a lot less that the manufacturer has to do to just drop it in a box and ship it. So frames, usually they can usually get those out the door in 2 or 3 days, maybe 4. So that helps.
Let's talk about frames, because I'm looking around, and again, we're in the middle of Iowa. There's Rock Candy Mountain over there. For those curious about Rock Candy Mountain, go back a couple of episodes to my Limestone 77, and you'll hear me go up Rock Candy Mountain for 7 minutes, pushing my bike. That was my guiltless, shameless plug on previous episode, by the way. Anyway, I mean, around here, I have a fully rigid mountain bike, and I love it for the kind of stuff we have around here, but I'm not seeing a single rigid bike. What do you sell, and why? Like, how, it's so niche to have full suspension mountain bikes hanging here, and hardcore downhill mountain bikes.
Yeah.
Like, how'd you get into that, and why that?
I grew up racing motorbikes, not motocross, but hair scrambles, which is a lot like the type of riding we do as mountain bikers through the woods.
Oh, okay.
And so I was trying to rekindle some of that, you know. So, you know, motocross bike, hardtail just didn't match up very well. I mean, I do sell a few hardtails a year. And as you well know, we've got a Pivot bike demo coming to Des Moines here in a couple weeks. We did that last year. And the biggest disappointment at that demo was there was no hardtail, because they have a hardtail, the LES, Pivot LES, but it's not on their demo fleet, which, you know, disappointed a lot of folks. So this year, I called my rep this morning and said, hey, remember last year people were disappointed? I said, can you send me a frame on demo pricing, which is a pretty good reduction in price. And I'll just build it up with some of these parts I have hanging around. And we'll have an LES hardtail there, because you're right. I mean, this is Iowa. I mean, a hardtail has its place for sure. I'm just now getting into local sales in the last couple of years. Last year, that Pivot demo was the first demo I had any of my manufacturers offer to come do. So it'll be interesting to see how my business model evolves, because I'm still not in Des Moines. I'm still a 30-minute drive for most people.
Correct.
You know, and in the beginning, you know, I knew in order to make this business model work, I couldn't have a constant revolving door of people just walking in, wanting to shop talk bikes, which is fun. I used to do that before I had a shop. I would go into Valley Junction, you know, mm-hmm. the bike shop, Norco shop there, and just walk in, and all of a sudden 3 hours had gone by just talking bikes with people in there.
Yep.
It just wouldn't work here. I mean, I'm the mechanic, you know, I'm the sales guy, I'm the owner, I mean, I'm the team manager for the race team. You know, I can't stop and talk for 3 hours. So yeah, I'm not sure how things will work out once I start pursuing more local sales. It's not imperative that I have them. I've already, you know, got my 150 customer base, you know, and but, you know, I would like to have some more local customers. I mean, the bikes that I've sold locally, I've sold more short travel, full suspension bikes than hardtails. I think in the last 2 years, I've probably sold 20 bikes locally, and most of them were a Pivot Mach 4 SL or an Ibis XC, Yeti SB115s.
What are people doing with them who live here or in, I don't know, Minnesota can get rocky.
Yeah.
Wisconsin can get rocky, but I would guess Illinois, Nebraska, Missouri, Northern Missouri, Kansas.
Yeah, I think Minnesota. I mean, Bentonville's changed everything for the whole Midwest. I mean, there's people in Des Moines. There's at least one group of people from Des Moines going to Bentonville every weekend.
Correct.
I
mean, yep.
It seems most of my customers go north to Minnesota to like Cuyuna, places like that. But places like that definitely warrant, I think, a short travel full suspension bike. And a lot of it comes down to age. I mean, once your knees start to ache a little bit, you know, like mine, I just turned 50 this year. And I think when I turned 47 and 48, I mean, that's when I really started to appreciate a full suspension bike. When Yeti came out with the Arc, reintroduced the Arc in 2019, you know, they hadn't had a hardtail for years, so it was a really big seller. So I'm like, if you're going to sell a lot of one bike, you need to be familiar with it so you can talk to your customers about it. So I built one up for myself. It was great. Had a lot of fun riding a different type of a bike, getting used to how the back end kind of has that reverberation of bouncing and how to compensate for that with your legs. And it was fun, but you know, then you turn 48 and you turn 49 and your knees just don't like it as much as a nice soft full suspension bike. And today's modern short travel full suspension bikes are so efficient that you don't gain a whole lot by going to a hardtail anymore in terms of pedaling efficiency. So a bike like an Ibis XC or a Pivot Mach 4SL, I mean, those things are rockets. And sometimes going uphill they're faster because they can maintain traction on the rear tire and not have as much slippage, you know, when you're laying down the watts going uphill. So
yeah, I actually signed up to ride one at your Pivot demo day October 20th.
Yeah.
Same day as Des Moines Marathon.
So yes.
I've got to figure out how to get there.
Yeah.
Because you are kind of in the middle of it.
Yeah, we figured that out after we leased the parking space to do that. In fact, the gal at the Des Moines Parks and Rec called me like 3 days later with panic in her voice, like, oh my gosh, I let you lease that and it's the Des Moines Marathon. Yeah, from what I understand, Grand Avenue and, you know, to the east of the Arts Center is going to be cleared out by about 11 a.m. once the racers come through. So
yeah, we'll be able to get there.
If you come bright and early, you might do a little walking to get to the demo site, but after 11, it should be fine.
Yeah, we'll get there. So. That's the first I heard of you. It popped up on Facebook. Facebook must have figured out that I ride bikes, and so here's a bike thing near you, so I'm going to shove this event in front of your face.
Again,
that's where I heard of you.
Yeah, in the beginning, I was very stealthy. I knew I couldn't have a revolving door of customers and make this work to get started and to work my way into high volume. You know, I had to work a lot of hours and stay focused on the bike rack. There were times during COVID I would be on that bike rack 18 hours a day, sometimes 19 hours a day, just putting bikes together. The name of the shop, Boone, you know, there's a Boone, Iowa to the north of Des Moines.
Yep.
And I'm to the south of Des Moines, so it kind of threw people off of my trail for a couple of years. And then COVID hit, and then you walk into a bike shop in Des Moines because your bikes need service, and they're like, we're 2 months out.
Right.
So people start.
Do you do service?
Asking around. I do some service, yeah. Typically service what I sell, but there were some people in real binds during COVID that I helped out. Because again, you'd walk into a shop in Des Moines and you're like, I don't want to wait 2 months to ride my bike, you know?
Right.
And it wasn't just that those shops were backed up. It's like, sometimes you couldn't get brake pads during COVID. You couldn't get a chain. You see all these frames hanging from the ceiling, but I rarely buy a bike as just a frame from any of my manufacturers. I'll buy a full build.
Oh.
And then inventory the parts. Because they'll come as a frame in a box and then a box with 100 parts in it. They don't come pre-built.
Yeah.
So you don't have to unbuild them to inventory the parts. But bike companies, you know, their OEM pricing is a lot better than my dealer pricing. So it's still the cheapest way to buy parts is to buy a full build.
Do they know you do that?
Yeah.
And they don't mind?
They don't mind.
Huh.
Yeah. They don't mind. And you know, there was a time before all these companies went direct to consumer with their business platforms, that shipping bikes was kind of taboo unless you just kind of did it within your own circle of friends. So I kind of had to ease into it, because when COVID first hit, you know, Yeti wasn't direct to consumer. You know, I hadn't signed up with Rebel yet, who was direct to consumer. So kind of had to tiptoe a little bit there at first, and just, like I said, go to races and meet people, work within your circle of friends. I don't do e-commerce, so that helps a lot. You know, when you have a platform on your website where people can click and collect and ship it, then boom, you've got a problem if the brand that you sell doesn't allow dealers to ship. Once virtually everybody's gone to some form of direct to consumer, then they were fine with it. So.
Yeah. Well, even the the manufacturers, you can go on, and I don't know what brands of yours you can do this, but I think Specialized, you can go to specialized.com, click and buy a bike.
Right.
How does that work with you and owning a retail shop, and do you feel that? Do you know, does that kind of shopping scare you in the future, if not today?
No, because again, I have a loyal customer base that they buy bikes from Boone Cycles because they want to buy bikes from me specifically. They want to talk to me. They know that I know them well at this point after working with them for years. They trust me. They trust the platform that I have here. They know they're going to get a bike that's going to do what they envision it doing. I mean, these bikes, I mean, there's so many categories of bikes now. I mean, you go from hardtail to short travel full suspension to mid travel full suspension to trail bike full suspension to enduro. Some bikes are kind of in between with all mountain between trail bike and enduro, and then full on downhill, and then throw e-bikes in the mix. And it helps to have someone you can call who knows exactly what terrain you ride, your riding style, your riding talent, your height, your weight. Have an enjoyable conversation with that person, because you're kind of friends at this point. You're friends with your customers when you require them to call you rather than just click and collect. So to answer your question, no, I'm not too worried about direct to consumer. It's exactly what some people want. They don't want to talk to anyone. They know what they want. They want to click and collect, literally.
Right.
They don't want to talk to anybody. That's just the nature of our culture right now.
It's midnight, and I'm itching to buy a bike, and so
right.
I go online and start clicking around, and I just want to hit buy. Yeah, you're right about that. But what I'm hearing you describe is I find super interesting. Because you're describing a bike shop, your relationship with the customer, you know your customer knows you, wants to talk to you, wants to get your advice, your input, yet you're selling to California and Texas and Colorado and New York and all over the nation, but you're a local bike shop.
Right.
You've got the service and the smile and the intimate knowledge, and I will verify that. Like when I worked full-time at the bike shop, I knew my customers. I knew my good, loyal customers.
Right.
And you do too. You just have a national audience.
Right.
In a small local bike shop.
Yeah.
It's super interesting.
Yeah. What I miss is going and riding with my customers. And as I said earlier, I kind of want some local customers. It's fun when the small handful of local customers I have, you know, a new bike model comes out and they're like, hey, do you have one of these in stock? Yeah, I'll meet you at Center Trails and we'll go ride. I'll bring a medium and a large if you're in between sizes, and we'll just switch back and forth. I've got to do that a few times and I love it. I mean, I love going riding with my customers. With the national audience, that happens once in a while. You'll go to a race in Vermont, and this guy walked up to me last weekend in Vermont and said, hey, I'm Chuck Barrett. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I've sold him like 5 bikes.
No way.
He sought me out at the race. He knew I was there from my social media, you know. Yeah, it was cool to have someone just walk up that you've talked to, you consider a friend because you've been on the phone collectively for probably hours over the last 5 years.
Yep.
And then boom, he's standing in front of you. So the more I get into travel racing, these national races, I think the more that will happen, and I'll get to ride occasionally with a customer. But I mean, there's nothing like local customers to just at the drop of a hat when a new bike comes out. And usually I get a new release ahead of time, so it's on my floor the day it's released. And just to hear the excitement in their voice, like when they call and say, hey, do you have this bike in stock? Like the morning it's released, I'm like, yeah, I got 2 of them in stock. Let's meet at Center tonight or Banner or wherever, and we'll go ride them. So I look forward to more of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's stuff you do at your local bike shop.
Right.
And you sell all over the nation.
I do.
Intentionally. Yeah. So it's such an interesting combination, and it's such an interesting model, 400 square feet of space. You know, here's another. I was looking at this space thinking, this is hardly, maybe just, a one-car garage. Maybe a little longer. I don't even think it's longer than, I think this is a small one-car garage.
Right.
And you've got a national audience. Are you making a living?
I'm close.
Close?
I'm close.
Okay. Do you have the potential to make a living out of a 400 square foot one car garage?
Yeah, I mean, I have 3 shipping containers I use for storage as well. So I do have, you know, quote, warehouse space.
Yeah, yeah.
But this has a lot of potential. When you have a customer base that comes back over and over and over, and you're selling stuff at a used car price point that you can drop in a box and ship it across the country, you know, yeah, I'm not worried about that part at all. It just, the timing of the crash of the bike market kind of stinks because it coincided with when I planned to kind of ramp up the profit a little bit, you know, and make it profitable.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of shops have gone under in the last year, year and a half, 2 years. So if you can survive it, I mean, and you maintain your customer base, then I think you're going to be in a really good spot going forward. So.
Oh, very cool. Tell me your brands again, main brands.
Yeti, Pivot, Revel, Ibis, Banshee, and now Mondraker.
Dig it. Accessories?
I'm big on Owens. Again, growing up racing motorbikes, Owens was a moto brand, so I gravitated towards that. Established a really good relationship with national sales manager there. He's been great with my sponsored riders. I mean, free suspension, you know, as they need it. Pay to podium. The reality is most people want Fox or RockShox, and all the bikes that I order come with Fox on them pretty much exclusively. Now that I have Mondraker, they're kind of half Fox, half Owens, but Owens is a big part of my business model. We've had a few component manufacturers that have really stepped up and like bumped my margin dramatically just because they wanted Cali to ride their product. So that's where people ask me all the time, I mean, so what does this do for you to sponsor these kids? Well, that's the biggest example right there, is I get better prices on what I buy, almost from every manufacturer that I buy from, that she rides, you know, with their components on her bike.
Sure.
So.
She being one of, if not the fastest downhiller in the world for her age.
I would say at the age of 14, yeah, I would be comfortable saying she was probably the fastest in the world. We found out in Killington there's a 15-year-old that's really fast. but yeah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, she's She's got an incredible pedigree behind her. Her uncle is one of the best supercross racers that's ever thrown a leg over a motocross bike. The DNA has definitely trickled downhill. I mean, she is so smooth and so fast and so likable. I mean, it's all good there. So
that's awesome. And at 14, 15, you're unbreakable. So
right,
you just as well go for it.
Yeah.
Total send.
She did have a concussion this year. People ask me sometimes, what is your biggest responsibility for sponsoring a racer like that? And I'm like, okay, biggest or most important? Because there's a big distinguisher there. The biggest is to make sure she's never at a competitive disadvantage. Her bikes have good equipment on them, good components, and they're in perfect working order. Suspension is serviced, you know, wheels are true. That's why I go to these races, just to make sure. One of the reasons I go to make sure all that's taken care of. But the most important responsibility is, like this summer, she crashed. She went across the finish line at 40 mile an hour in Angel Fire, New Mexico, in a downhill race, and hit her head pretty hard, and got her first ambulance ride to Taos. CT scan came out clear. We thought she was fine. She said she was fine. Next weekend, we were in Sunrise, Arizona, and got up to altitude, and the concussion symptoms started to surface. And she ran three stages of the race. It's an eight-stage race. The fourth stage, she almost turned wrong and went off the race course.
Oh, wow.
At a fire road. I'm like, oh, man. So, you know, her parents are the most important voice in her ear, but my most important job is to be another voice in her ear to let her know it's okay, Callie, to step away.
Right.
You can't hit your head twice in 1 week. Any racer at any age is going to be concerned about what their sponsor thinks if they don't finish
the
race. But kids take it to heart even worse. So, yeah, that's my most important job, I think, is to be another voice in her ear to let her know it's okay. What she's done to this point is never been done before as a 14-year-old. I mean, she's got everything in front of her, and the only thing that can screw that up is probably a bad head injury that can, you know, remove her from racing. Because you hit your head twice in a short period of time, that can be it. Like, your career can be over.
Yeah.
So,
well, we'll wish her the best for sure. And
yeah.
All your.
Yeah, she took a couple weeks off and came back strong. Ended up the Monster Pro Downhill Series champion for Cat 1-15-16. So, yeah, it all worked out. But
she's building quite a resume. That's fun.
Yeah, she is.
That's fun.
Yeah.
And you plan to stick with her as she ages?
She'll go race World Cups most likely in 2 years. I mean, next year we got a full schedule of all the Monster Energy Downhill, Pro Downhill races. You know, after that, I think she'll probably get a factory ride from a major bike brand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if there's a way I can still help her out, absolutely. You know, I've got a few other riders in the pipeline that are similar talent but much younger.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time she goes to race World Cups, these other kids will be ready to kind of step up into her position on the race team. So, yeah, it's so much fun being part of that, seeing kids work hard for something and then achieve, and giving them all the support that I can, and negotiating support with my manufacturers for them. Yeah, I couldn't ask for more as a 50-year-old guy that used to race motocross, who just built log homes for 25 years. It was destroying my body. You know, I had to get out, and this is what I landed into. I mean, I'm having the time of my life. I can't complain about anything. I mean, yeah, the market downturned, you know, and it's hurting a lot of shops and a lot of manufacturers, but I'm insulated with this low overhead business model. Hinterland paying for what little overhead I do have. So, yeah, it's all good.
Sweet. Where do people find you?
BooneCycles.net or BooneFactoryRacing.com. That filters to the same website. Instagram, Boone Factory Racing. Those are my three main.
And 47 feet east of the Iams Covered Bridge,
yeah,
in St. Charles, Iowa. Little gravel lot and a little one room schoolhouse, single car garage, whatever you want to call it. It's a delightful little cabin. I love it.
Very boutique-y is what I hear a lot. This is like a true bike boutique.
That sums it up.
Yeah.
100%. It's exactly what we're looking at here, for sure. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, and I'm going to look forward to seeing you again on October 20th.
Yeah.
Making my way through the Des Moines Marathon to test ride a Pivot. Tell me what I'm riding.
Mach 4 SL.
Mach 4 SL.
Yeah.
That's what I'm riding. Well, I like it.
Oh.
I'm coming off a fully rigid single speed. So compared to that.
You're going to love it. You're going to be shocked at how fast and efficient it is for a full suspension bike. It's next level stuff for sure.
Yeah, I'm stoked. Can people still sign up for that? You got space?
Yeah. Well, they sign up on the Pivot website.
Okay.
So, if you go to my Facebook page or the Center Trails Facebook page for Des Moines Center Trails, Hillside Roller Coaster. There's a link there.
If somebody just stops by?
Yeah, we can get on the computer here in the shop and just sign up right here in the shop. So
sign up that day, would be able to get on a bike?
If there's something open, they definitely take reservations and recommend making reservations. But if there's a bike that's open that's not reserved, absolutely. Last year we had a lot of people walk up and just say, hey, what's available? And we'd tell them this, and this, and they would take whichever one. So,
sweet. Well, I wish you the best of luck. And I, again, was super intrigued by your business model. And sounds like it's working. You're still eating. You obviously have a roof over your head because I'm looking up and there's a roof over our head and a place full of inventory that's getting shipped all around the country. I think that's super cool. So congratulations. And
thank you.
You're to be commended on your creativity in making this happen.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet.
I'd like to thank Clint for hosting me at his little shop in the middle of nowhere. Boone Cycles is worth connecting with if you rip it in the woods. Anything off-road, he can fix you up. All custom, just for you. Check it out at BooneCycles.net. And just try and keep up with Callie and the rest of the team at Boone Factory Racing on Facebook and Instagram. In the meantime, I've got to get ready to head down to our local trails and give this full boinger a try at the Pivot Demo Day on Sunday. I'm also starting to get some miles in on my fat bike. A few frosty mornings reminds me that the Arrowhead 135 is right around the corner. It's time to buckle down and start taking this winter bike packing ultra training serious. I hope you'll follow along as I figure out bike setup, my gear, and training for the late January race. For those new to the pod, I'm doing the Arrowhead 135. It's a 135-mile winter fat bike ultra that goes south on the Arrowhead Trail from the Canadian border in International Falls, Minnesota. It's something the likes of which I've never done and I'm nervous about, and I decided to take you all along with me as I prep for and eventually ride it. One thing I'm currently experimenting with are my Pogi lights from BikeIowa.com. I used them on a couple of negative 20 rides last year, but those were only like an hour or two, and they did keep my hands warm and dry. One of those rides was in a blizzard, like literal blizzard. But I do need to see if I can stay out there all day long, and all night long for that matter, and keep my digits from freezing. If you ride all winter long, check out the Pogi lights in the online store at BikeIowa.com. I'd like to thank you for tuning in today. I appreciate it, and I would love it if you would rate and review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you want to support this show financially, feel free to drop some coins in the cup at buymeacoffee.com and give this show a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're trying to tune in on your computer, just go to biketalk.bike and every episode is there and easily streamable. Thanks again for tuning in. I hope you have an awesome week. And remember that nothing compares with the simple pleasure of riding a bicycle.